Well, welcome back to another episode of Queer Lehigh Valley. I'm your host, Robin, and I use any pronouns. I'm super excited today to welcome our guest, Charlie Ann. Do you want to tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. So my name is Charlie Ann. I go by three-four pronouns. I was born in Puerto Rico, but I grew up a lot of my life also in the Lehigh Valley. I love the color blue, all kinds of blue. The blues that are like between cyan and turquoise are my favorite. I like to sing and dance. I like to paint and write poetry. I'm a Cancer. I love nature, and Jesse Reyes is my favorite artist.
That is a wonderful intro. I love how you captured all of the very vibrant parts of yourself. So I thought there is no better person to talk about this topic than with Charlie. We're going to talk a little bit about queer Taíno identity in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. For people who don't know who Taíno people are, do you want to give the audience like a little bit of an explanation?
Yeah, so the Taíno people are the people that are indigenous to the Caribbean. So it ranges from Puerto Rico, Haiti, Jamaica, Dominican Republic. They're all considered Taíno. And the word Taíno itself translated is split up into two parts. So Tai and No. And Tai translates to good, and No kind of gives like a plural of people. So we literally translate to the good people.
Can you tell me a little bit about yourself as a queer person also? I know it's a huge question to try to answer, like, tell me about your identity. But, you know, how are you arriving in this space today?
Yeah, I would probably say that myself as a queer person has mainly to do with starting to grasp how much of my life or how I viewed the world or how I viewed myself was rooted in the aspects of resistance and like always questioning the concepts of like the idea of like that's just how it is or this is how it has to be. When I was younger, I was considered a tomboy. You know, I wanted to do everything that the boys could do. And my name being Charlie Ann, a lot of people would nickname me as Charlie. And once I started to see the reaction of people in the aspect of like a girl being called Charlie, oh my, that was like my fuel to be like, call me Charlie because I'm a girl, I'm not a boy. And what? That's so dumb that you think that those names are only for boys. And then as I got older, you know, started to creep into the aspects of like feminism and intersectionality. And then I would say once I also started to explore more of like my culture and my indigeneity, that just added into all of that in the aspects of just realizing that, you know, I've always been this way, always thought this way, even if I didn't have the vocabulary for it, I realized that it comes from something deep within me that is much older than me.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. I love the thought of like little tomboyish Charlie. I think that we would have gotten along as small people. I was a very feral little kid.
Yeah, no, I agree. I just remember it was always like t-shirt and pants for me because though I was like skirts and stuff like that, I'm like, I know I'm going, and wherever I'm going to play. So like, I don't want to be worried about if my panties are showing. That's not my problem.
Yeah, I definitely remember my mom like banned me from wearing skirts because she said that I like couldn't be ladylike. Which really just meant that I was just like sprawled out, and she was like, we can't have you being like that. You got to just wear some pants. So you're talking a little bit about queerness already, but I know that you're involved in like a ton of queer spaces in the Lehigh Valley. Which kind of spaces feel like home to you? If there's any place where you feel like where you're going to be celebrated or yourself?
So I would say the main being would be like the Bradbury and Sullivan LGBTQ Center and Queer Chamber of Lehigh Valley, because those are like kind of the main spaces that I'm in. But also when I kind of first started going into my like queer journey as an adult, where like, going into it beforehand, my like understandings of like myself and the way I thought, I was like, oh, like I'm all of these things, like bisexual or pansexual and poly and things like that. But then once I got into the Bradbury and Sullivan Center, it was just more so like I'm so much versus all these little terms that people use to try to understand the being that I am. And I'm like, I don't even understand the being that I am. How is these words gonna encapsulate that? And so stepping into the Bradbury and Sullivan Center, I started with the pan group and just found that like so many other people had like similar queries and like aspects surrounding sexuality or gender. And then specifically within the Bradbury and Sullivan Center, I would say that the place I feel the most at home at is the Queer Shade Group, which is a queer group specifically for BIPOC, which is Black, Indigenous, or People of Color people. And it's just a really awesome space because I found that most of the time BIPOC spaces tend to already be at a certain level of like resistance or understanding in the aspects of like how queerness is rooted in like anti-racism or anti-misogyny, anti-capitalism. And I would say that that's the place where I've been able to find the most connections. And then when it comes to like queer trans Lehigh Valley, I would say that also really solidified the my aspect of like my queer identity, because I, deny myself my queerness a lot because I just feel like I've always been like this. And sometimes I just think that the way that I'm perceived in the world is what defines me versus the way that I actually feel and am and act. And when it comes to Queer Trans Lehigh Valley, it just felt like a very accepting and open space that like just fosters curiosity while also showing grace and also being very rooted in like community aspects of like sustainability within our community.
Beautiful snapshot of those different like experiences in local queer community. Just like reflecting back some of the stuff that you were talking about, it seems like maybe like getting to be part and like more rooted in community spaces, like maybe give you space to like explore your identity more deeply or more language around that. Do you feel like that's true?
Yeah, I do feel like that's true, because I would say that when it came to me existing in those spaces, even beforehand, I almost like didn't think that I belonged in queer BIPOC spaces, being a white appearing Latino. And it's almost like I was the only one that was holding on to the concept of like, I'm not queer enough, or I'm not, Puerto Rican enough, or things along those lines. And it was one of the spaces where it's like when you go to connect with people or develop relationships with people, sometimes when it comes to different types of demographics that you exist in, it's hard to connect or find intimacy when you have to spend a certain level of energy, communication, educating the other person on what are, systemic or continuous struggles for you. And having the space where it's almost like there's already a requirement or already a type of level of intimacy that comes with these spaces in the hopes of it being free to explore. And I would say that whenever I find a new space or anything like that, it's always the aspect of like realizing like, oh, these people think just like me. I'm not, like, wow, like I didn't even know that's how you could say that. That makes so much sense. That's, putting words to emotions that I didn't have words to.
Love that. That's so beautiful. I've definitely had a lot of similar experiences of like being among other people, especially other queer and trans people, making me feel like more called to just explore myself more and feel also like my experiences are also kind of not that unique, which is comforting sometimes. I will say that like I've been really blessed to like know a lot of Taíno folks, and a lot of people have taught me kind of a little bit about Taíno identity and culture in the present day. I just wanted to start off by asking, what does it mean to you to be Taíno? Given some of the context of like sometimes stupid history books will say things like Taíno people don't exist or something like that, which I know not to be true because I have so many friends who are Taíno, but what does that mean to you to be a Taíno person in the present?
So for me, I would say the aspect of being a Taíno person has so much to do with the meanings rooted of the word in Taíno. So when it comes to our indigenous language, a lot of times it has to do with, what you see or how you experience what you're trying to say, because it originally wasn't, a written language. So again, with Taíno, the literal definition being good people, for me, I feel like that's where my identity is most rooted in, because I have grown up, for me, it was almost like it was ingrained in me, the aspect of like, the more you have, the more you give. Or the amount of times that like I hear people talking about other Puerto Ricans once they meet me and share stories of how good the people have been to them, how they've always immediately treated someone like family. And, even speaking in the context of history, in Columbus's journals, he wrote specifically about how, well, he called us naive, but how naive we were because of how willing we are to part with materialistic things. You just say that you need something and we give it to you if we have it. But obviously he wrote it in the aspect of like, he came from the land of the most horrible people. So then coming here and witnessing that experience, he couldn't even grasp the capacity of, community or simply just living to live. And I would say that's the overall like foundation when it comes to what being Taíno means to me. It's about figuring out the way to be a part of that community that is considered, good people.
Now that's such a beautiful way to describe it. It's always so fascinating, like, because I have read a lot of journals of like colonizers talking about encountering people, and it's fascinating, like, that mindset around assuming that like people are naive or less than for like their community mindset and their kindness. Because that shows up a lot for in journals of like North American Native folks too that I've seen. So it's interesting that that kind of same mentality comes up from him also. But I love that connection to grounding yourself in goodness and reciprocity and stuff like that.
I also feel like, again, like the Taíno people, because they're on the coast, it led to a lot of trade and things like that, and it even made it up to Florida and so forth. So I would say, there is a lot of similarities and connections that root back through all of us.
Well, we'll be back in a minute after a short break. This is me, Robin, and Charlie Ann at Queerly High Valley.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning podcasts that air weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, business, health, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. WDIY podcasts are on 88.1 FM, streaming at WDIY.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. This is Robin at Queer Lehigh Valley, talking with Charlie Ann today about queerness and Taíno identity in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. So continuing our conversation, I'm going to start off by asking you a little more historical context. So historically speaking, how does queerness show up in Taíno identity? And then do you feel like there's a difference between how queerness shows up in Puerto Rican culture?
Okay, so I would say the aspect of queerness showing up in Taíno culture, and again, like we also have to think about the fact that like these words, you know, the aspect of queerness, I feel like
For
was
certain.
something that's so normal within Indigenous communities that it's almost like what can you really define as what is considered queerness versus just culture? But from what I've found interesting, you know, is that from the language, the little bit of the language that I am learning of the Indigenous language is that, you know, there are feminine and masculine pronouns, but there's also gender neutral pronouns. And obviously there's dialects within like the language where like specifically the Borinquen Puerto Rico, there's a certain language versus like if you go to like Haiti or Dominican Republic. But I've also found that like the words that they use to describe queer people actually translate to rainbow.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, so like for DR, their indigenous language there, I found that it was Kiwari. And then for the indigenous land of Borinquen, it is Tureo Anaketa, which, you know, the literal translation is basically multicolors in the sky.
Oh, I love that. That's beautiful.
Yeah. Then the other thing on top of that, that kind of for me highlights queerness within the culture is, for example, you know, our semis, there's certain stories that go along with our semis. So for example, we have Atabey, which is like considered the mother of fertility, or you know, just the mother of like everything. And then to match that, we have Gwei, which is the sun. But I found and was, you know, looking more into it, and it turns out that like the understanding of Gwei was the concept of a son, you know, like a child, but with no paternal type of influence. So, and the culture also being, you know, a matrilineal society, it just made me think of the aspects of how the femininity was reverend, and I can only imagine how that showed up in the aspects of like what we would today consider like trans women or non-binary
Yeah,
people.
for sure.
And I would also say like it, the environment influences it. We're on a tropical island, it's hot as heck, we're pretty much naked. So when it comes to that, the aspects of what we wear would be very similar. And then how, for me, the way that that would differentiate between Puerto Rican culture is that Puerto Rican culture does have the aspects of being very colonized within it. For example, I don't remember what year it was, but it in across the whole of the United States and everywhere they own, Puerto Rico was the number one of the year. I believe it was 2001. That year, Puerto Rico, out of all the states, was number one in the aspects of murders of trans women. And I found that to be like so hurtful because it's the complete opposite of what we hold sacred. And you know, the machismo inside the culture, the homophobia, you know, because of Catholicism and Christianity kind of sinking its teeth into the roots to kind of take away what our culture actually was.
And that's definitely really painful. I mean, I think that it's like the continued ripple effects of colonization is that like some of those primary harms often being women and non-binary, gender fluid, gender expansive people. But I appreciate you like sharing about that. I definitely find it beautiful to be able to have that thing to call back to still, be able to be like, despite all these things, like at the core of the culture is an idea that being queer is like not only normal, but also like integral to a society.
It's almost like it just happens, you know, where when we're given the space to be able to simply exist and simply live for each other, we just naturally gravitate towards these concepts because we're so much more than, you know, societal norm.
Yeah, for sure. So this is more just kind of like reflecting about yourself. So we talked a little bit about culture in general, but what do you feel like your relationship is between like your own identity, your own Indigenous identity, and your queerness?
I would say that the aspect of the multitude of identities that I hold is having to kind of reclaim what I consider to be authenticity for myself. It's almost like growing up, you're fed the environment around you. And because of that, you know, I grew up hearing that I didn't look Puerto Rican every time that I would tell someone that I was Puerto Rican. And it just makes you know, wonder like, who is it that I am then? If I have to look a certain way or behave a certain way, or, you know, as a young adult, people, once they found out I was Puerto Rican, they kind of wrote me off in the aspect of like, oh, well, here comes the spicy, hot Latina, hot-headed, and all of this stuff. And I bought into that and believed that like I should act and be a certain way to be perceived as Puerto Rican enough. On top of that, being white appearing, it's almost like I felt like I didn't have a right to certain aspects of my culture, or also that I obviously wouldn't want to take up space that I shouldn't. You know, I want to give respect to wherever I'm at. And I would say it also has to do with the aspect of like the combination of growing up between both Puerto Rico and the Lehigh Valley. My mom also grew up that way, and because of that, that kind of influenced her because of her witnessing what her parents had to go through in the aspect of coming into this country trying to figure out what's the best way for them to live, and the effects of things as simple as them speaking Spanish in public would affect them. Where I grew up with my mom constantly correcting, like, you can't say it like this, you have to say it like this, in the aspect of like English and being grammatically correct and things along those lines. So I would say that's a bit on how so many things can just influence your understanding of yourself, and then how you're actually perceived in the world and what they believe you to be.
That makes a lot of sense, and I appreciate you sharing all of that. Kind of digging into that a little bit more, what does it mean to connect to indigeneity while you're not currently living on your homelands? I ask this as somebody who I also kind of consider myself part of a diaspora because my dad's side of my family is part Umatilla and Ecuadorian, and I don't live on either of those homelands. And so connecting to indigeneity is interesting in that I definitely sometimes wish that I could be those places. And then also trying to celebrate some of the what it means to be here also.
Yeah, I would say the aspects of growing up between both, because the way I grew up, it was more so like I was born in Puerto Rico, and then we came over when I was around 4 or 5. And then from then on, I would spend the school year here in the Lehigh Valley. And then in the summertime, when my parents were able to get their 2-week vacation, they would schedule their 2-week vacation to be then. And then for the summer, we would stay with our grandparents or aunts or uncles. And that way, then they wouldn't have to pay for childcare. It's really that. And obviously, that gave me a certain experience and a certain feeling and a certain piece of Puerto Rico versus the aspect of growing up on the island. Obviously, when we were there, there would be things like the lights going out or us running out of water, because where we're from, I'm from Peñuelas, and we had a farm up there. So sometimes the power would go out, and that's very common in Puerto Rico, or running out of water, and figuring out how to live with that, where it definitely felt normalized versus when it would be over here and it's just expected. And for me, I always felt, I didn't understand it when I was younger, but every time that we would go to Puerto Rico, it just always felt so different. Here, it always would feel in the aspect of like everything has to be fast, everything has to be done fast, it has to be done right now. And when I'm in Puerto Rico, it would feel like I could finally breathe.
Yeah.
And obviously the experience that I got, it being summertime, me being young, not having to go to school and necessarily experience that in the long term, can influence the aspect of viewing it as a magical land and paradise, because that is what it is. But like the aspect of like running out of water, running out of electricity, the poverty, that's not to say that it's not a hard way to live, but it's a different type of hard in the aspect of what do you sacrifice when you buy into the aspect of capitalism and working your life away versus being able to be somewhere where your culture feels a lot closer, where it literally is surrounding you. And I would also say that it's only within the last few years that I've even given myself permission to start to have a relationship with the Lehigh Valley land that I occupied.
Yeah.
Because it almost felt like a betrayal to Borinquen, while also at the same time feeling like I don't have a right to this land. I'm also a colonizer in this land, you know? So I would say it's hard because I love my home. I love Puerto Rico. It's also just the aspect of the nature of it. It might also have to do with the fact that like I live closer up into the mountains. So like the nature there, it was everywhere versus like here where there are beautiful places, obviously, but it's almost like you have to like travel far to get to them versus it literally being, you know, you could climb up onto the roof of your house and you're looking over just mountains of land.
For sure. Yeah, it's Lehigh Valley is an interesting place in that way. And there's some really clear, beautiful pieces of nature, but also it definitely feels intentionally separate, which can be hard as I'm a fellow person who also I like to be right next to the nature thing. I like to be inside it. I don't want to be separate from it. I feel like I could talk to you forever about these things, but I have just one more question for you before we run out of time. Are there any people who've come before you, who you really look up to, who inspire you, either as a Taíno person or a queer person, that just come to mind for you?
For me, when it comes to the aspect of people who have inspired me, I would say currently right now, I would say Priscilla Colón, who is the founder of Casa Arioca, where they've basically created a platform for people to be able to learn the Taíno Borinquen language, and has turned it into a YouTube channel, an Instagram page, has gone to conventions, has turned it into a like website application that's similar to like Duolingo, and it's constantly evolving. They also provide resources, which is awesome. Another person that I would say is Maitiel Chu. So Maitiel Chu passed, I don't know, probably like 5 years or so. And I remember every time we would go to his house, it was very interesting, this aspect of Christianity or Catholicism and like Santeria, but then on the other side there being like, because in Puerto Rico a lot of times there's like big porches that go all around, and he just had one long side of the porch that each side had like just long table, and on the one side it had the like saints and Catholic statues and the Virgin Mary, and on the other side it had more indigenous relics and things that looked more indigenous to the land, but yet both of them, you know, they were like his own altars where they had money or food, or you know, when you go in the portón, in the grates of the porch, there would just be corn, just corn there. I would say that, and the aspects of like Puerto Rico should be independent is something that he fostered for me. And the one other person I would say is my grandma. She also has had, you know, the experience of growing back and forth. And she has experienced in Bethlehem when she was here in the 80s, the aspect of like police brutality or harassment where, like, in her community, she told me stories about how if any of them within the community got in trouble with the police, they would always have to go and find this one specific person, because within that community, he was the only one that also spoke English. Versus now, her being 80, and when I ask her or talk to her about the past or the aspect of indigeneity or even the aspect of queerness, there's so much curiosity that comes from her. And even to the point where she started speaking the language to me slowly, you know, because I'm not about to throw a whole bunch of stuff at her, but like something like good night, we would wish each other good night in the indigenous language, where you say sai karaya. Karaya translates to moon, so it would just be good night.
That's beautiful. So
besides that, I've tried to look further into my ancestry in the aspect of like the names and going back, but I haven't really had the ability to go as far back as I would want, / like try and get into some museums that might have like names in books that I might be able to find.
I love that. Well, this has been really wonderful. Like I said, I could talk to you forever about this. But thank you all for listening. This has been Queerly High Valley, me, your host, Robin, today with Charlie Ann. So,
bye.